Vielen Dank, Frau Opara, für diese Einblicke in Ihr spannendes Projekt. Ich glaube, wir haben alle einen guten Eindruck bekommen. Ich bitte jetzt Frau Fludra Gorana auf die Bühne zu uns. Frau Gorana ist Mitarbeiterin der Organisation War Child Holland. Sie arbeitet im Libanon und ist im Libanon auch beschäftigt beim Menschenrechtscenter. Frau Gorana hat 20 Jahre lang Erfahrung in der Arbeit mit Geflüchteten und Asylsuchenden. Und ein Teil ihrer Arbeit sind auch Beschäftigungsinitiativen für Jugendliche, Geflüchtete und Asylsuchende. Und noch ein dritter Teil ist die Arbeit, die sie macht in New York. Da beschäftigt sie sich auch mit Jugendlichen aus Randgruppen.
Thank you and good evening. I have to apologize. I wish I could speak to you in German, but I can't. So you have to bear with my English. I want to tell you a story about a program called Can't Wait to Learn. A lot of research was put into it. There's great statistics, numbers to prove it and all that, but I don't want to tell you that story. No offense to any MNE people or statisticians or researchers, but I just want to tell you the story from a different perspective, from the eyes of the people that work on the ground and from the eyes of the children, and just take you through this journey. This is only slide with a lot of letters. Everything else is pictures because I want you to also see what we see every day. So Can't Wait to Learn started as an idea, small idea, about doing something big. Currently, it's a global program. We are implementing in Beirut, in Jordan, in South Sudan, in Uganda, and very soon to be in Chad. So it's an education program where children learn how to read and also do math through tablets. But the important part of this is the co-creation phase that took place. So we took the curriculum for basic literacy and numeracy, and we converted it into the game. Now, the designers of the game listened to the children. There was a lot of sessions with the children where they actually gave their input because it had to be contextualized. It had to fit the place where we started in Lebanon. So children met with the designers. They looked at the drawings. They gave ideas about them. They created the characters the way that they wanted. And the biggest fight was, you know, what gender is which character going to be? So at one point, the boys were saying, well, the doctor has to be a man because that's the job for the man, right? And the girls had a small argument with them. And then at the end, they came back and they said, okay, let it be the man. But guess what? The girl is going to be the astronaut. And the girl became an astronaut. So the children were able to make adjustments to the characters. They gave input. The designers were from Lebanon and from Amsterdam. They worked together. The game was developed. Everything was in place. The next step is the training of the teachers. Teachers are a very important part in this. And they had to feel comfortable with this because all of a sudden, they were seeing this as a bit of a threat, right? You're bringing a tablet in the classroom. What is my job going to be? But you know, they learn to see it as a tool. It's not replacing the teacher. That could never happen. But it's a tool to help them teach children math and writing skills. So the first day of implementation, this is Shatila camp. I wish I could tell you more about it, but the time will not allow. So it's a refugee camp that is based just outside Beirut. It's been a refugee camp for 70 years. This is the third generation of Palestinian that has been born in that camp. It was raining, there was no electricity, the tiny streets of Shatila became a river, and the entire team was there. We were working with about 40 children, and an amazing thing happened. I was fortunate to have seen many times first day of sessions in any education project, and you always have children that are not happy, that are crying, that don't want to be there. And we gave them tablets and everybody knew what to do. It was an instant, you know, silence in the room. They got to play for 45 minutes every day because we don't allow them to play longer than they have their other subjects that they have to go through. These children are all between ages 10 to 14. They have never been in school, or they've been out of school for more than 3 years. And we work with them in different camps through Lebanon. But the important thing is that the idea is to have them into formal education, but that doesn't always work for a lot of reasons. So at the end, they will at least learn how to read and write. So it's not, a lot of things have been said, what works and what doesn't work. And there is, yes, we do have to tackle a lot of issues, but at least giving them something to do, especially in the places where there is nothing around them. There is no school, or the distances are really far. The parents don't want to send their children into a second shift school because then they finish school really late. And to come back home, they'll get there late. In a lot of cases, they get bullied. So then this pilot phase finished, and we said, great, it's working out great. Let's just roll it out throughout the country. So what we do is we, in each neighborhood, we do basic needs assessment. So just to see, you know, what is really the need there. A lot of times we'll get a report from Ministry of Education saying that, well, in this area there is really no out-of-school children because the enrollment lists are huge in the school, but that's not really the case because being enrolled in school and attending school are two different things. Most of the children, not all, but most of them are refugees that came from Syria. Even though some of them were actually born in Lebanon because their parents came there since 2011, they do carry the trauma that their parents experienced. Trauma is a vicarious thing. It's not contagious, but you do feel it, especially when you live in the same household or in the whole neighborhood that was affected by that same trauma. So we work with children on psychosocial support and also on child protection, and it's all embedded into the education programming because for us, those are the three main pillars. So in order to distinguish, like, who's gonna, you know, what is gonna be priority, because when you have many areas in the country that are extremely vulnerable and everybody does need some kind of support, we work with a lot of different organizations to see, actually, you know, to kind of map out the services that are happening. And a lot of other international organizations are taking this game and they are implementing it in their programming. So to give you a bit idea about the context, so it's not just education. Like I said, psychosocial support is really important. It's embedded into education. In Lebanon, children with disabilities have, like in a lot of countries, have really low access to education. Schools are not prepared for that. So the largest number of Lebanese that we have in our programming are actually Lebanese with disability. It's the hardest selling point is actually to convince the parents of the children that don't have disability that it's okay to be in the same classroom with somebody that has a disability. It's not a contagious thing. You can really help them out this way. So their favorite thing is to put on the shows. It's a community event. Everybody gets involved. We don't just work with the children. We work with the parents. One of the biggest things that they asked us, especially the girls, is they want to stay longer in the centers because it's the only place where they actually get to leave the house and be with other girls or youth their age. So their hours are getting longer. They're coming up with more activities. It's always something around education, but we do give them a place where they can meet, where they can come, where they can talk, and they can also tell us what can we do better, because you have an idea that you're doing a good job, right? But we do like the feedback from them. As you see, it's a blended approach in education. So you use the tablets, you use the books, you're using Legos, different thing. You saw earlier display of different classrooms throughout the world. Ours look, you know, I could see ours in many of them. For instance, this is an old abandoned school building that nobody is using. So we spoke to municipality and they let us renovate it a bit. There's not much money for equipment, but you know, the old desks came really handy. And we work in some areas where we work in the camps, we rent the container, there are semi, I forgot what they call them. It's not a structure that it's built in there. It's a container that you actually bring and you can turn it into a classroom. And we work in refugee camps. So this is the reason why 125 people that work with me get up every day and go to work, because it's really not easy. But you have to love it to be able to do it, because you hear the stories, you talk to the children, you talk to the parents, you talk to the communities, and at the end of the day, you do feel their pain. You might never be able to really feel what they're feeling and understand what they're going through, but at least, you know, it touches you enough that you get up the next morning and you go and you do the same thing. So just to get back to challenges about can't wait to learn. So it's a tablet, right? It needs to be charged. We're working in places that our electricity is not quite stable. At the end, your desk looks like this. You get an error message, you panic, you don't know where to go, what to do. So we actually work with a company in UK that built us these, what they call them, charge buses. So it's this huge box that looks like you're carrying an atomic bomb in it, like super secret thing, and it has locks in it. So a lot of times when we get stopped by checkpoints and they see something like that, it's like guns at the car, get out, open it. So it takes time to explain what it is. But at least it makes it possible to charge about 25 tablets at the same time. So you use the maybe 2 or 3 hours when you have electricity, you plug them all at once, it only takes one plug, and the tablets are charged. So one tablet can be used by 4 different users, and when you have different shifts in the classroom, then different children can use the same tablet. They all have their their username, so we can collect the data from the tablet and see the way that they're improving based on that. So we developed the math game. We said, why not do it the Arabic game as well? We're working on also English and French right now. In Lebanon, the curriculum, the official curriculum in government, math and sciences are not in Arabic. They're actually in French or English, depending on the school where the area where you live. So you do have to prepare the children from early ages to be able to at least speak a bit of a foreign language. For the Syrian children, that was really a challenge because they don't start learning foreign language till much later in the school. So the Arabic game was developed. We took, again, the curriculum. This is Mona, who is the teacher specialist. She does a lot of teacher trainings. And then she said, why stop it there? Let's develop a board game. So for the younger children. So that we developed a board game that is based on the curriculum, same thing that is using the tablet, but this is for much younger children. So it doesn't answer, doesn't answer the questions about, you know, how sustainable this is, or how, you know, what is the impact of, you know, on the bigger picture, but for now, just in Lebanon, it helped about 9,000 children how to read and how to write, and that's something that we're proud of, and we're working to increase that number by a lot. So that's it. Thank you. I just wanted to say, really, thank you to the city of Vienna, and thank you to Sudbin for inviting me. And I would like to thank all of you. I mean, it's really nice to see such a diverse age group and to know that you're actually interested in this. It's really, really nice. So thank you.